Welcome to the Livecast. You're listening to Inspiring Guest Loyalty with special guest Horst Schulze, a world-renowned expert in the hospitality industry and former chief of operations and president of Ritz-Carlton. In this podcast, Schulze shares his hospitality manifesto, the three key subconscious expectations, and how to strengthen guest loyalty. For the next hour, listen along as the man who set the bar in luxury hotels explains how he built a culture that values service above all.
In a way, everybody works in hospitality. Everybody has guests, patients, or whatever you call them, clients, customers, everybody has it, every business. And the moment when they walk into your business, you're in the business of hospitality. So, but the ones that work in the hotel business here, by the way, I have done your jobs, whatever it is, unless you work in accounting or engineering or now technical stuff that didn't exist in my time years ago, I have done your job. I give you a little bit my background so you can relate more to where I'm coming from and what I'm thinking about this business of hospitality. And again, everybody's in hospitality, it doesn't matter. What do I think about it and why I think about it, what I'm going to explain to you. I'm going to get along and tell you a number of facts about customers and thinking and so on. And mind you, again, I give you facts. So if whatever I say, if you don't agree with what I'm having to say, it means simply that you are wrong, because I'm going to give you facts. So you must be wrong if you don't agree. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to give you my background a little bit, as I said, so that you can know where I'm coming from. I worked as a dishwasher. I worked as an assistant waiter, as a waiter, as a housekeeper. I washed more dishes than most of you have seen. Not with dishwashing machines, three things at a time, and so on. So I grew up, I went to my parents when I was 11 years old and said, I want to work in the hotel business. They said, okay, 11 years old, didn't pay much attention to it, but I kept on saying it. Nobody knows why, but I kept on insisting about it. I kept on crying about it. At that time, growing up in a small town in Germany, that's not what you did. That was not respected. Respected was if you work in any type of a technical job. My parents were hoping I would be an engineer or an architect or something like that. And even if you would have worked as a roofer, that's respect. And our carbon, that's respect. But in the hotel business, what's that? That was nothing. In fact, as I kept on insisting on it, 11 years old, 12 years old, 13 years old, 14 years old, my parents were nearly a little bit embarrassed in a small town, telling in the school that's what I want to do. But they said, if he is so existent, we have to do something about it. They got information from government agency of what you do in a career in the hotel business. And so they found, through this agency, found an apprenticeship busboy job in the best hotel in the region. Unfortunately, it was about 100 miles away from my home. So I left home. My mother took me, but once it was settled that I would work in that hotel, this fine hotel, I was admonished by my mother, by my father too, but my grandparents, we could never go to a fine hotel like that. This is only for important people. Now behave yourself accordingly when you go there, pay attention, wash your socks, take showers, and all the stuff parents would tell you. So my mother took me by the train, and at that time it took 3 hours to get there, 100 miles in Germany. I can do now in half an hour about, not exactly, but on the Autobahn. But I was far away from home. Then I found myself living in a dorm room. When we arrived there, the general manager told us, the guests that are here are very important people. You are here in service, you're to serve, help. But understand, those guests out there, they're very important people. Basically the same thing my parents told me. I knew When I started the next day with my knees shaking in the restaurant, helping cleaning tables, cleaning ashtrays was the job today. Doesn't exist anymore. That was the first job, cleaning ashtrays, cleaning the room, washing dishes afterwards and so on. So I have done your job. In fact, I know the pain and I know the pleasure doing the jobs that you do. I worked there for a few years and then I went on, worked in Switzerland two seasons, then I worked in Holland America Line, Holland, then I worked in Paris for 3 years, went to London, worked there for a year, and truly in the finest hotels in Europe. In the meantime, I had advanced to be an assistant waiter. And then somebody in the restaurant said, we are opening a hotel in the United States. Would you work in the U.S. and work as a waiter? Sure. But didn't. So I'm an immigrant. By the way, I filled out my papers. Everything is fine. All the papers are fine. So very legal. They asked, they went to the embassy. They asked some stupid questions. I answered them. And I can tell you the stupid questions. Once someone is risky to tell. But anyway, I came in legally. Started working, worked in San Francisco, in the Hilton, worked as a room service waiter, and slowly as an assistant, was promoted to supervisor, was in a club, and slowly worked for Hilton, kept on working for Hilton, was promoted finally to assistant food and beverage director, finally rooms director, and then I left and worked for Hyatt for the next 10 years. Became rooms director, general manager, regional vice president over 10 hotels, 10 Hyatt hotels, and then corporate vice president running the food and beverage and operations for the United States. When somebody called me, and this is my story, I'm going to give you my story about where I come from, what I'm thinking, what I did starting Ritz-Carlton. And that's really the story, what I tell you about Ritz-Carlton. I'm running another company too, but it's kind of story, taking Ritz-Carlton from no hotels to 55 hotels and the leading hotel company in the world, name-wise. And in fact, we were voted best brand in the world. Brand, not just hotel, from no hotels. So I got a call, there was somebody building two hotels in Atlanta, one was a Holiday Inn, one was supposed to be a Holiday Inn, one was supposed to be a Marriott, but they could not come to agreement and decided we're going to create our own brand. We have to hire somebody. We are developers, construction, and financial people. We hire somebody to start this new hotel company operationally. And for some reason, I was recommended. They called me, and I said several times, no, it's pertinent. But they kept on calling me. And as they called me and said, you should do that. And I said, no, look here, I'm happy in Chicago. I'm happy with my job, a great company. But my mind started saying, what would I do if I would take that job? A normal thinking. And slowly I developed a real vision what I would do. I thought myself, if I would take that job, I would go there and create the finest hotel company in the world. And in the meantime, I told them not to call me anymore. But they called one more time. And I said, yes. I left Chicago crying because I left a great company, driving to Atlanta to build a hotel company where there was a hotel company that had no hotels yet. They were in construction. We changed it. It was not a Holiday Inn and not a Hyatt. We in the meantime, we were able to buy a hotel. As we were still under construction, we were able to buy a hotel in Boston, which was a very dilapidated old hotel, but in a great location, and it was called Ritz-Carlton. And we said, and so our owner, the owner of the company said, I'm buying this because it's a great location. We close it and renovated for 2 years, and it will be a great location, great hotel. My marketing director said, if that's what you're going to do, my vice president marketing, If that's what you're going to do, buy this dilapidated, lousy hotel with a bad name, I'll quit. I cannot build a brand like that. And we bought it, and he quit. So there we sit there, we closed that hotel, and a few months later, we opened our first hotel, the Ritz-Carlton Atlanta, Bucket Atlanta. What was our thinking there? What was the thinking? I established some of the thinking. It's a key thing. One of the things was, I'm going to build the finest hotel company in the world. I now started hiring people and told them, do you want to join me? Don't come to work for me. Because back to my first job, I was lucky. I had as a kid, 14 years old, when you're very impressionable, I had a maitre d' that kept on saying, don't come to work. Come to work to be excellent. Come to work to create excellent. Come to work to be somebody special and not just work. It didn't make much sense to me as a 14, 15 year old, but it didn't leave me. In particular, I had an incident then. Mind you, I knew I wasn't very important. My mother told me that the whole people, the guests there are important, not you. My father told me, my grandparents told me, the general manager told me, everybody told me. And I was working there. But then, but Wednesdays, one day a week, we went to hotel school. Typical German upbringing, you work and you go one day. That's one way of going into the business. Went to hotel school. And after 1.5 years, I wasn't quite 16. We were asked by the teacher to write an essay now, what we now think about our business that we're in, this hospitality business that we're now in. What do we think about it? And I thought, and of course, what do? You think what I'm going to write for next week? And I went back to work the next evening. I mean, working all the way over there in the corner. I never forget it. When I could feel the maitre d' just entered the room. When he entered the room, you could feel it. You knew it. He had a presence that was exceptional. And he looked sharp. He would have never entered the room without looking 100% sharp. He could have shaved in his shoes. They were shining. He looked right. He lived his role. And he came in and I watched him going to a table, and it occurred to me for the first time, as he went to that table to this guest, that the guests were proud that he came to the table. He went to the table, explained wine, explained food, went to the next table and helped to prepare some food on the table, and he could see those guests were proud that he was at the table. And he impressed me particularly. He spoke English on one table, French on another, German. We were in Germany, but there were foreign guests. And I realized, wow, there is a reversal here. I see a reversal. The guest thinks, those guests that are so important, we are not, but they think he is the most important person in the room. So did we, the employees. I contemplated that and wrote my essay around it. I wrote that night, I made notes myself, and I said, we are ladies and gentlemen. We, the employees, are ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. We're not servants, which are basically told we were. We're not servants if we are excellent in what we're doing. We can sentence ourselves to be servants, or we make a decision to be excellent in our profession, whatever it is, even if it may be washing dishes. Either I can make a decision to be a servant and just fulfill a function, or I can make a decision to be excellent in that function and consequently define myself as a person of excellence. Yes, it is work where we define ourselves. It is work where we spend most of our waking life, and consequently, it is there where we define ourselves. So it's a decision that we make. Do I define myself as a person of excellence, or do I define myself as just somebody? That's what I wrote in my essay. I named it, we are ladies and gentlemen. We are ladies and gentlemen. Serving ladies and gentlemen, if we create excellence in what we're doing, no matter what it is that we are doing. I would have forgotten about that essay, frankly, but I got an A. It's the only A I ever had. And consequently, it stuck with me. And the teacher, when I came the next week, read it after I put it, gave it back to him, read it to all in the class and invited other teachers to come in. It was a big deal. So it stayed with me. So it stayed my motto. We are ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. And with that in mind and with that spirit, we started Ritz-Carlton. We are ladies and gentlemen. I made it very clear. The motto of our company is, we are ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. And I made it also very clear. The reason why I came here was not to work. The reason why I came here is to create the finest hotel company in the world. And if you want to work with me, join me. Don't come to work here. Join me in a dream. Join me in what is called telos. The Greek philosopher Aristotle wrote first about telos. In fact, he wrote, be with me, ladies and gentlemen, it's worth it. But in fact, he wrote, to be filled in life, to be fulfilled in life, you have to have a great telos, meaning a great dream, a great vision, who you're going to be as an individual or connected to your work. We cannot separate work and our individuality. But as an individual, you have to make a decision. I'm going to create excellence. And I can see who I'm going to be a year or 2 years from now. That is telos. That is purpose in life. He said you cannot be fulfilled unless you have purpose and feel a sense of belonging. By the way, thousands of philosophers and every behavioral analyst comes back with the same conclusion. You need telos, you need purpose, and you need belonging. So I developed a purpose. The purpose was, and the vision was, the dream was, the purpose, the telos was, we are going to be the finest hotel company in the world. And anybody, we invite anybody that wants to join us, it doesn't matter who it is, we're going to invite everybody to join that dream and be part of that dream and not just come to work. Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to offer, and I was hoping and literally praying that people would understand that I'm offering them to be part of a dream, of a purpose, and not just of working and function. Working is fulfilling a function. Ladies and gentlemen, the chairs on which you're sitting is fulfilling a function. We're human beings, we have to think higher. And I was possessed in offering that. I had no illusion that everybody would get it and everybody, because some people are just not smart enough. But I thought if the majority, but I still have a moral obligation to offer it. So we offered them a purpose. Come join us. Create the best hotel company in the world. And we started off and we said, in order to create, now if I want to be the best hotel company, best company of any business in the world, the best company, if I want to be a company of excellence, what do I have to do? I have to know what my customer wants and give my customer, if I am giving my customer my product more satisfying than the competition does, I'm a great company. I'll sooner or later be successful. If the guests that come to my hotel, if the customer that come to my shoe store, if I had one, I'm more satisfied in my shoe store than their next shoe store, they will come back and talk about me. Or hospital, or dental, or hotel, or restaurant, or what it is, if they feel better. By the way, when you go to a restaurant, what restaurant do you say, let's go for dinner? Where are you going to go? Where the food was good? That's not true. I mean, you give you facts, not only facts. You go where you felt good. That includes the food, feeling good. So we knew we have to make sure that our guests feel better about us and our product than they feel about others. Wait a minute. How do I know? I have to know them what they want. So we made studies what the customer want. We went to the University of Colorado and worked with a professor to consult with us. To study of human behavior, what do the people want? We made studies. We had the word analyst making studies. What do the customer want? What do they really want? And it turned out it was very simple. And one said, understand, I can tell you what your customer wants from you. No matter what you're doing, I can tell you what you want if you buy anything. No matter what it is. If you buy a car, I know what you want. If you buy a house, I know what you want. If you buy a luncheon, I know what you want. If you buy a bottle of water, happen to have one here. If you buy a bottle of water, I know what you want. In fact, no matter what it is you want, you have three subconscious expectations. And mind you, subconscious is stronger than the conscience. What do you want when you buy a bottle of water? Or a house, or a car, or a radio, or a TV, doesn't matter. You want to be sure that the product that you buy is defect-free. You don't want it to leak. You don't want anything bad to float in there. That's your subconscious. You're not conscious of that, but that's what you want. Number one. Number two, you want it timely. You want it when you want it. Not when they are ready to give it to you, but you want it now. Timeliness happens to be an extreme importance when you deal with your customer. They want everything right away. You have to understand it. You have to understand that your product that you deliver has to be defect-free. In a hotel, defect-free means the door opens, they check you in timely, the TV changer works, the toilet flushes. It is clean, 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 clean. If you're in hotel business, write it on your front, here, right there, clean. They want a clean hotel. It's the most important one of defect-free that you can have. And they want everything else to work. They want it timely. Just like you want it defect-free, you want it timely, you want it when you want it. So do your customers. So you want it, what do you want with a bottle of water? You want no defect, you want it timely, and you want that the people who give it to you are nice to you. That's called service, hospitality. That they're careful, that they're nice. And in fact, the being nice is a greater driver of customer satisfaction than the product itself, believe it or not. You can argue that, I give you only facts. Now, if several times the product is not good, no matter how nice you are, you will not forgive it. So obviously, they will forgive you. If the bottle is leaking, you can't be, wait a minute, it's leaking. And they say, please forgive me and change it right away, I'm so sorry, you will forgive. But if it is fine, and if you got it timely, but they're unfriendly, you will not forgive. You will not feel good. It's not just in the restaurant we go for dinner, if they weren't friendly, you wouldn't go back for the food no matter what. So that's the business we are in. We are in business hospitality. Incidentally, the first person that wrote, as far as I know, about hospitality, not about hotels and inns or so on, but actually the word hospitality, was Saint Benedict. Saint Benedict who created the Benedict Order of Monks in Europe. Mind you, he created the abbeys around Europe. And when people at that time in the Middle Ages, when people in the year 500, that by the way, that happened, when people traveled through Europe, when they traveled alone, there were men, ladies would not have traveled alone, it was too dangerous. The men traveled alone, they stopped in the abbeys for shelter, to stay overnight, and for shelter and food, and then went on. Saint Benedict wrote to his abbeys, to his cloisters. He wrote, I want you to treat the guest right. I want you to treat the guest with absolute hospitality. Listen to this. In fact, when a guest arrives, I want you to treat each single guest as if it was Jesus himself. Now that's hospitality. How can we live up to that? We can't. But that is the first word of us. Let's measure that level to what we're really doing. But I said, we want to be the best in the world, what is done today. So we have to work, make sure we have no defects. We have to constantly work and take the mistakes out of our operation. We do as much as we can to give no mistakes. That we're the absolute cleanest in the hotel business. That doesn't sound so difficult, does it? We just made sure we're cleaner. We didn't talk about clean anymore. We talked about being immaculate. And we made sure we are there. knowing full well that's what the customer wanted. We knew that. We started it. We made sure we took mistake by mistake. We worked on our timeliness. We worked how can we make it give the deliver faster? How can we make sure our check-in is faster? How can we make sure it's defect-free? And we worked on our caring because we knew the caring was the most important. We knew that by now. We knew that. That we looked at them and showed them that we cared for them, that we are happy to help them, that we are delighted to be there. So we started how to do that with behavioral analysts. We knew we for instance understood that a human being makes a decision about the other human being and about, consequently, about the institution with whom they're working when they come within 9 feet of another human being. They make a decision about you, like it or not. Oh, we shouldn't do that. We should look skin deep, shouldn't we? That's what society's garbage tells you. It's not true. We can't help it. It's not our fault. That's how we are made. We make a decision about the other human being up within 9 feet. Since we knew that, we taught everybody intensely. If any guest comes within 9 feet, no matter what you do, you look him in the eye, you smile, and you say, welcome. Give him the first step of service. What is service? 3 steps. Number one, welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, or welcome. That's the first step of service. The second step of service is complying caringly to their wishes. I want to check in. That's my pleasure. I'm here for you. Welcome, complying, farewell. We were happy to serve you. Thank you for choosing us. 3 steps, nonstop in the hotel. That's service. We made sure that we knew the decision, the first decision about us is within 9 feet. We know in the telephone, for example, the decision about you happened after the third ring. And when you answer it, call your office. How do they answer the telephone? Most companies and other companies that are here, call your office. Most companies, when you call them, they answer, what? Whom have I reached? Answer. It rings. First it rings a number of times, then somebody, instead of saying, I am here to help you. I am, in our case, we are the Ritz-Carlton, and I'm here to help you. How can I help you? Wow. Telling them you're important. That was the first moment. Knowing, having learned from the behavioral analyst that they make a decision over us the instant they make contact with us. The personal contact is 9 feet. Knowing that's it, I had to manage that. So that's what we managed. We did it in every location where we were. So we now knew what a customer wants. They want no defect, timeliness, and caring. We understood what service was. We knew when they make decisions about that, so we managed that. And we managed that so that our customers would become loyal. Ladies and gentlemen, there are 3 types of customers. Understand this. The ones that are dissatisfied. The dissatisfied is a terrorist against your company. They go out and talk bad about you. Mind you, when they talk bad about your hotel, about your company, they're talking bad about you because you're connected. You're defined by the reputation that your business has. And who creates that reputation? You. Nobody else creates a reputation. Your CEO doesn't. He's not there. He's sitting in his office. You create, each one of you creates the reputation of your company. I was invited a few months ago, last November, to the 5-star awards dinner, worldwide 5-star awards dinner in New York, where the 5-star hotels from around the world come and get the award as 5-star, and everybody is in a tuxedo and everything looks great. I was invited, I was there, and the host got up and said, by the way, Horst Schulz is in the room, and everybody got up and applauded. Did they applaud me? No, they didn't. They applauded the reputation of Ritz-Carlton. They applauded the reputation that was created by doormen, by busboys, by waiters, by maids, by all kind of employees. That's what The reputation reflected on me. I was kind of in a way sad. How can I applaud all those people who created a reputation? I didn't. I was in my office. They created a reputation, but they also benefited. Because I can tell you, because of the reputation they have, if a Ritz-Carlton employee looks for a job, even today still, and they apply for a job, and 100 others applying for the same job, the Ritz-Carlton employee, former Ritz-Carlton employee, gets the job because of the reputation that he has, because he or she, because Ritz-Carlton's reputation. And that reputation was created by everybody in there. Why did it happen? Because we had enough smart employees who understood that and were there to create, to define themselves at work and create a reputation. And of course, we had hired them to be part of a dream and invited them to be part of the company and showed them the dream and repeated the dream and said, that's where we're going to go. And they came to work to be the best in the world, and they became the best in the world. Of 55 hotels when I left, 49 were voted number one in their country. In China, number one in China, number one in Japan, number one in Germany, and so on, so on, so on. Why? What did we do so different? We invited our employees to be nice, to create a reputation for themselves, to be nice. And because of that reputation, grow the company and have opportunity. Because of that reputation, have more customers and bring more money. Because of the reputation, be proud to go outside and I work for Ritz-Carlton. Because of that reputation, be honored and respected and so on. And they understood that and joined me in a dream to create excellence. To create excellence. So we went on and started the first hotel, built it that way, and the second, and third, and the fourth, and grew. And in every location where we went, in every country where we went, we were the leader. Because we didn't change that. We didn't change it anywhere. Because people in around the whole, but we made one thing sure. We selected the right employees. We selected the employees that were smart enough to understand this. If they were dishwashers, they understand this, that it is better to work and create excellence than just go to work. Like a machine, like a chair, like a computer, just work. That it is better to be a human being and create excellence. So we selected them right, number one. Number two, we oriented them right. And any manager here, you have to orient your people right. What happens when they come to work to the first day in your department? I know what happens. First of all, we hire them. How do we hire them? In the hotel business, not your other businesses. In the hotel business, I can tell you years ago, now we don't have unemployment anymore, thank goodness. But we had unemployment, but it made me angry every time I heard people saying they don't have jobs. There wasn't one hotel in the United States that didn't look for employees. Not one. Because the turnover in the hotels is dramatic. But that's our fault in the industry, because how do we hire people? I can tell you, because 120% turnover in our industry, because of, number one, how we selected people, how we hired them. If the guy can walk from the wall over there to about here, without falling down, he was too drunk, we hired them. Guys, with 102% turnover, you had to do that. That's why we decided we don't do that anymore. We start selecting people that are smart enough and see that together we can make a difference, that together we can create excellence, that together we can have fun working. So we created a selection process. In fact, we used an outside company to help us to select in Lincoln, Nebraska, the companies. And the second thing we did to make sure we had employees who lived up to this, to saying hello to everybody, to respecting everybody, to be helpful, to be caring for everybody, to look them in the eyes and saying with the eyes, I am here to help you. I respect you, customer. We selected, then we oriented them right. How does orientation, the first day of work usually happen in a hotel or in any business? Also in yours, who are related, I know it, I work with many other companies, it happens all the time. The new guy comes, the new guys or new woman, obviously, the lady comes to work. And we said to them, okay, come to work here. We are a team here. We work together. The stupid team speech happens. What is a team? A team is a group of people who have a common objective. We don't tell them our common dream. We just tell them we're a team. And then we tell them, hey, Bill, work with Joe. Joe knows the ropes here. You're not in the rope business, but somehow Joe knows something about ropes. So Bill goes with Joe. That's his first day. And Joe, on the way, Bill is a new waiter, and Joe is a waiter that works there already 9 months. He knows the ropes. So Bill goes with Joe, and on the way to the kitchen, Joe tells Bill, this company sucks. That's his orientation. Now, how would we possibly expect this guy to be aligned to the company? That's the problem. That's part of the problem. And then he works, and then he's being told how to fulfill the function. The function of his jobs, which have to be fulfilled, but he's not there for that function. He's there to become the best in the country, the best in the world, by doing his function, yes, but he's here to create excellence. So we tell him the first day in orientation, what is excellence? Here's what we believe. Join us. Don't come to work here. There is the dream. We want to be the finest in the world. Join me in that dream. Join me to be consequently, you're respected. You make more, have more opportunities. You have more everything. You have more honor if we accomplish this. This is the dream. This is the vision. This is the purpose that should fulfill us. As every analyst ever said since Aristotle a few thousand years ago. We know that. So we invite them to join us, but we explain who we are. We say, here we are. We open our kimono to them and say, here's who we are. Here's our heart. Here's our soul. Join us. Come in. And then the next 3 days, we teach them the key element of service processes. The key element, we teach them that we have to look at them within 3 feet, with 9 feet, with 3 meters. We teach them all those things. We teach them how to say hello. We teach them what words not to use. Don't say hi. Hi means we are buddies. Hey, hi. Morning, hi. But wait a minute, they're guests. We want them to feel good. We want them to feel important so that we can feel important. Good morning, sir. No hi. And then we say, okay. Then we teach them, don't say okay. Okay, I would like another pillow. Okay. Can I check in? Okay. No, that's my pleasure. My pleasure to help you. I'm here for you. I'm delighted to help you with this. Another pillow, I'm delighted. My pleasure. You can always close the door and say, no, I can't stand it. But my pleasure. We show them that we care for this customer because we want to convince them to come back. A great company works for loyalty. A great company, every employee, if you walk into a Capella Hotel Company, that's my hotel company now, which I sold to, right? But anyway, it's my hotel company. If you walk into any Capella hotel and you can walk in the kitchen and work all the way over there in the corner where the pot washer is and ask that pot washer, what is your number one objective here? He will say, my number one objective is to make sure that the guest wants to come back by the job that I'm doing. If you ask the front desk, what is your objective here? Checking people in? No, my objective is to convince them by how I check them in that they want to come back here. Create loyalty. What is loyalty? Loyalty means they trust you. And if you care for them, if you respect them, they trust you. So the great company creates loyalty. Number one. Number two, a great company finds new customers. Number three, a new great company gets as much money from the customer as possible. We're in business. Without losing them, money without losing them. And number four, you do it efficiently. So, as I said, you have three types of customer. One is the dissatisfied customer. I said that. They're terrorists. They talk bad about you. They talk about you. They talk about your company. That means you. And if you work for X, and he talks lousy, this X is a lousy company, and you apply for a job, or you tell somebody that you work for X, and they heard that you're a lousy company, they think lousy of you. This is common sense. Then why don't you stick together and create the very finest? So, then of course, they're the satisfied customer. That means nothing. They're satisfied with what you're doing. They're okay. They're satisfied. But if the guy next door offers a better deal, that's where they're going to go. But then they're the loyal customers. They have, because of you, because how you treated them, because how the human contact went, because we told them with our eyes, with everything, you're important to us, we care for you, they develop trust in you. And that means they're loyal. We know, don't say not in my business, your other business, in every business. Fact, I'm only giving you facts. We know that loyal customers are willing to pay more for the same product. We know that. So why don't we want loyal customers? Why don't we create it? To create honor and integrity and respect on the same. That is what service is. Welcome, comply, farewell. That's what it is. What do they want? No defect, timeliness and caring. Let's experience that for a moment in a totally different business, in a bank. I told that story a million times. It's a true story. I was invited for a bank in Chicago years ago, to speak about customer satisfaction and customer loyalty. I'd never been in that bank, but I knew them well because they advertised their good service on my radio station I have set in my car. All the time they advertised their excellent service. But the day before I had to speak to them, they said, you speak to about 300 managers that morning. The day before I thought I better go in that bank today for a moment and look at it, because somebody will say tomorrow, have you been in our bank? And I have to say no. And then I can say, of course I have. Like today I went to Mount Rushmore. And when I have a discussion in the future, I once at Mount Rushmore have been there. I didn't see it because too much fog, but I was there. So I was there, yeah. But I had good ice cream. Good ice cream in a good time. So back to the bank. So I went into the bank. And you know, it's a great building. Go with me. Great old building, stately, impressive. You can feel the riches. And you went in, marble, old marble floor, marble columns, stained glass windows. And you can feel the money all around you. And probably even stuffed in those columns of marble, I don't know. But you can feel that, you know. And then all the way over there was a counter, mahogany, with all the tellers. And in front of the counter, a mace. Now remember what service is. Welcome, comply, caringly, farewell. Remember, what do I want? No defect, timeliness, and caring. So I'm in the mace now. And go to the mace, I count the people in front of me, 24 people. I count the tellers, 24 men, and number two. And sure enough, it goes pretty fast. Pretty soon, I'm number one. And I look left. I don't know why I looked left. And on the right, somebody screams, next! Oh. The first step of service is welcome. She screamed, next! And I went to her teller. It was a woman. Oh, man, men are always worse in service. But I was a lady. I went to her teller. I looked at her face. I could see her face. I don't know her. So she doesn't know me. And then second, she did something. She looked up, and it was totally clear, unmistakable, that she hated me. And she said, yes. I said, I just want to change $50. And she said, 10, 20, 40, 45, 50, next. I take my product, change. No defect. Timeliness was excellent. But for the next 15 years, I mentioned the name of the bank when I told the world how lousy they were. And they deliver, and the very thing that they produce nothing else but service. So do we. We don't make beds, we don't make pillows, we don't make faucets. We make service. and practically any other company does. They produce service and told the world how lousy they are. Because if one employer talked negative about the whole bank, that's why you have to avoid that anybody around you defines you by their lousy service, defines you as being lousy. You can't have that. You cannot accept. You can only accept excellence for yourself and around you, but know that you deliver it. So that is service. So what could she have done? What could she have done? She could have said, the next gentleman, please. And I come over to her and she said, welcome, sir, how may I help you? Just want to change $50. That's my pleasure, 10, 20, 45, 50. Have a great day, thank you for coming by. Bang, instead of dissatisfied, I'm satisfied. Big difference. Now I'm gone away. Now if I would have that type of service in a bank repeatedly, not change, but if I would, I would become loyal. I would trust them and become loyal. But what if she would have done something more? What if she would have taken that whole piece that is service, welcome, comply, farewell, and lifted it to another level? That means personalizing and individualizing service. What if she would have said, the next gentleman, please, and I come to her teller, and she would have said, welcome, Mr. Schulze. Personalized. My name, respecting me by saying to me, Ms. Schulze, welcoming me. How would you know? I don't know. We have 1,000 tricks. You don't check into one of our hotels where the doorman doesn't say your name. We know when you come in, we have your name. We have tricks to do that. What if she would have said then, all right, well, how may I help you, Mr. Schulze? I just want to change $50. And she said, 10, 20, 45. And here are 5 coins, because I know you collect coins. Individualized. So she gave me caring service, personalized and individualized. That is moving service to truly fine, individual, personal, professional level. Well, we know, we identify constantly what the customer wants. Every employee has a customer preference list in their pocket. As soon as the customer says anything they like, boom, you write it down. And next time you come in, you have it. If they the checkout says, gee, I really like your chocolate cookies, next time they check in, they have chocolate cookies. If they sleep on the right side, but we had the slippers and the mat on the left side, next night it will be on the right side. Everything is personalized, constantly personalized. That's why we have a customer satisfaction of well over 90, of a customer loyalty satisfaction. That means in our service that we make every day, I know that our customers in our hotels, in Capella hotels, well over 90% say on a scale of 1 to 10, we only count 9s and 10s, 1 is lousy, 10 is perfect, we only count 9s and 10s, but well over 90% say, I want to come back top box, I want to come back and I want to recommend you. I want to recommend you. Well over 90%. In fact, if it drops well over 90%, I'm on the telephone with the general manager. I say, hey buddy, what are you going to do to correct this? Let's analyze. Why are you under 90%? We must be over 90%. Is it something I said? No. So we must be over 90%. In fact, if the general manager with this hotel doesn't correct it, and it drops in the 80s, mid-80s, they know I will move into the hotel and correct it myself. Everybody is worried about that. Nobody, no general manager wants me to move in and say, you just watch, I do it. So we work constantly. I know 4 things every morning. I know the economics of the moment. I have to know that. We are in business to make money and pay the buildings. Our buildings cost about over $1 million a room to build. So I have to make money. I check every morning the economics, 50 hotels, easy to do. When I was discounting 50 some hotels. Every morning I check, I know the customer, the employee satisfaction, we study that. Every morning I know how the guests feel. And I know they have future indicators. We measure that constantly. If it drops, I get involved, work with the hotels and help them. What is my role, corporate office? To help them to accomplish it. That's mine. But my role is also not to make compromises. Because you see, when I established that we want to be the best hotel company in the world, I questioned myself. No, I agonized, saying, will that be good for everybody? If I'm going for that dream, if that is the dream, is that dream, if accomplished, or the journey to that dream, is that good for the investors? Clearly it is. Then I question myself, is it good for the guest? Clearly it is. Then I question myself, is it good for the employees? Clearly it is, because if we're the best, they are highly respected, they have more opportunities, everything comes with it. They have honor, they have integrity, they gain everything. Clearly it is. Is it good for society, for the communities that we work in? Clearly it is. So now I knew this mission, this dream, this purpose of coming to work for everybody is good for all concerned. In this moment, I had no more right to compromise with anything. Because if I compromise for one general manager or one employee, I compromise, I am against everybody else. The dream, the value of a teller, the value, the dream itself was worthwhile. To be part of a dream than rather than part, just part of function. I want to remind you, and I keep on reminding you, the chairs on which you're sitting is fulfilling a function. I have to say, we have human beings, we have to elevate it. And that elevation is to have a purpose. I'm not the one who says it. Every philosopher ever said it. Every human behavioral analyst said it. That's essential, to have a purpose and belong to a purpose. And of course, understand the value of that purpose. So now the purpose was done, was clear. I offered everybody to be part of it. I point out to everybody, don't join me if you cannot be part of this dream. And so our employee turnover went down. We didn't pay more. Sure, they made more tips because they had better customers, we were busier. But we didn't pay more. But our employee in the hotel restaurant industry, US, was 120%. Ours was 21%. We built it down from 80 to 21%. Turnover. The teaching was sticking in the company because people felt part of something. So that's how we built the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company. And that's what service is. Service is such as simply something very simple. To be caring human beings that care for other human beings. And of course, there are technical step in between. There is check-ins, there are computers, and all those things have to be learned and worked on. But that is function. If I can add to the function and to have good teaching of all the steps of processes that you have, in addition, continuously improve those processes, continuously improve the processes. We have a system where we continuously improve the processes. When a mistake happens more than once, let's say we have slow room service, 2, 3, 4, 5 complaints in a row, we create a team. We don't say, why did this happen? No. We invite room service waiter, busboy, cook, room service order takers to sit together and find the cause of the slow service. And eliminate that root cause so slow service will never happen again. And that's how we continuously improve. And we get less and less mistake by having continuous improvement. I know those of you that read or study quality management, you know what I'm talking about. And that for that reason, and we became the best in the country for that reason, the government said we're the best and gave us as an example. That's how we won the Malcolm Baldrige Award, for those of you who knows what it is, given by the president for the best example of how to run a company. And that's what we did, have real processes, how we select employees, how we onboard employees, how we improve constantly, and how we sustain it. How do we sustain what we teach in the very beginning when they come in the first and second day? How do we keep that up? Well, we have 24 points that the first day we teach, don't teach that. The second, third time, we teach those 24 points, which we know if we do this 24 points better than anybody else, we will be the best hotel company in the world. Because we know the customer likes that. So the 24 points, like you, if you get a complaint, you own it. That means if you get a complaint, what are you going to do in saying, each individual, if the room service waiter in the morning says, no, the coffee shop manager, waiter in the morning says, good morning, sir, I hope you had a nice day with us. And the guest said, no, I didn't because my TV didn't work. In that moment, the waiter owns the TV. And the waiter should say, instead of saying, I call a manager, the waiter says, please forgive me. In fact, I feel so bad, I will buy breakfast this morning. We know that of complaints you're getting, in any business, by the way, we know that for a fact, of complaints you're getting, over 90% of the people that complain just want to get rid of their frustration. They want somebody, they don't want somebody to refer you to somebody else. They want when they give you a complaint that you take and say, please forgive me. Finish, it's over. We know of the 5% or 4 to 5% that is left, legitimate complaints are about 2%. And the other 2%, they want something. They're also annoyed, but they want something. So we have to work on it, understand all that. And we knew that. We empowered our employees. We empowered our employees. You see, alignment is a word that's constantly used in hotel business. What is alignment? Alignment is every employee knows where the company wants to go and what the customer wants. If every employee knows that, you're aligned. And that's a word that's being used. And empowerment is being used. What is empowerment? Empowerment, it doesn't really exist. If you complain to somebody, they will call the manager. But we studied that. You see, we studied everything. Where the word analysts sit down in focus groups, not listening to what they said, but what words they use and concretely what they meant. And listen to this, an interesting story. We did that with a lot of stuff. And for example, I want to know, what do they want to know? What do the customer wants when they said they want to feel at home? They say it all the time. So the word analyst, we studied that with focus groups. And it came back, they don't want to feel at home. They want to feel like in their memory, in their subconscious memory, they felt in their mother's home as children. That's how I want to feel. Why is that? Because in their mother's home, everything was done for them specifically. There was food that they liked in the refrigerator. They were done things for them. They didn't have to worry who cut the grass. Never thought about it. Who changed the light bulbs? Never thought about it. It just all happened. And here's the key. When something went wrong, and they went to their mom and said, Mom, there's something terrible happened. What did Mom do? Mom said, come here. I take care of you. Mom never said, I called the manager. And again, that's what they want to feel. So we empowered all the employees, all. You can make a decision up to $2,000, but whenever you get a complaint, you own it. Say, I am here for busboy, waiters, everybody. You are here, I'm here for you. I take care of your TV or the toilet isn't flush. It's my toilet. I'm the waiter, but it's my toilet. I take care of it. And I feel bad. You don't pay for breakfast this morning. Up to $2,000, that's right. Why did I do that? Because I was crazy? People said that. People, when I said that first, the absolute uproar by the investors, absolute uproar, lawsuits, I did it anyway. Because I knew that the average age of our customers is 43 years. They could still travel 30 years. I knew if they would travel 30 years, they would spend with us $150,000 to $200,000. I'm happy to spend $2,000 to keep $200,000. That was the decision. The decision was all driven customer thinking. Make sure the customer wants to come back. Make sure that a customer is loyal. Make sure when that customer leaves, they talk others about us and tell them that we are exceptional professional, each one of us. And we were able to do it because we had enough employees that were smart enough to get it, that refused to be a chair, that want to be human beings that created excellence. And that's why we created a reputation. And it was so simple. The main thing we had to do, be nice people. Wow, how difficult. So it was not just for us the right thing to do, it was the moral thing to do. It was the moral thing to offer a purpose when I know that a human being needs purpose. And what was a moral thing to say, join us, when I know a human being wants to belong. If everybody didn't understand it, so what? I had a moral obligation to do it. But I then had a moral obligation to insist on it and not to compromise. Leaders, you have forfeited the right to make excuses. I don't accept excuses. I didn't hire you as a leader to tell me why things cannot be done. I hired you to find solutions and work on solutions. I give you the model of leadership. Ladies and gentlemen, all of you, I give you the model of leadership because the leadership of yourself is the most important leadership. When I'm talking about leadership, you think about somebody up there. Well, no. You have a responsibility to yourself first to lead you. And what is the model? The model of God great leadership is to have a vision, to have a purpose. And then invite everybody to join that purpose. Number one, vision, purpose. Number two, be committed to it. Not just have a purpose and then forget about it, but be totally committed to it. Dream. Close your eyes. Dream where you want to be in a year, 5 years from now, and commit yourself to it. And then start initiating the steps that get you there. Everybody can do that. And then comes the most important thing, focus on it. Focus on it. Because we find excuses. We find apologies, that's why we cannot do it. But it's gone. In that moment, as a leader, it's over. You have no more rights. When you figure it out, it's good for everybody. No more right. You have no more right to make excuses. You now are committed. You have started a step. You now have to keep focus on it, not focus on the explanations of why it cannot be done. And we find all explanations. You know why we find explanations? Why it cannot be done? Because we want to protect our insecurities. That's the only reason. We want to, in case we don't make it, and we have already told people as to why we don't make it. We have to stay away from that because the enemy, there's only one enemy from you accomplishing your vision and your purpose. And that enemy is you. There's no one else. It's you. And once you start accepting that, that means you start leading yourself toward a higher excellence. And that's with this philosophy and that thinking deeply in that, accepted by thousands of employees, we created Ritz-Carlton and created the greatest brand, not just the greatest hotel company, the greatest brand in the world. And that was in 1983, we didn't have a hotel. We opened our first one in 1984. And when I left 19 years later, I left on a Friday, short. My wife picked me up. My kids picked me up. We walked out with tears. I wanted to retire. I was traveling 250 days a year. It was enough. I walked out with last little files there and the employees waving goodbye. Drove home, and I was glad to leave, and I was sad to leave. And the weekend, Monday, I went to my wife and said, I'm going to go to this part of the town and look for an office. And she said, why, for heaven's sake, you will look for an office? And I said, I'm going to do it one more time. And she declared me insane immediately. Are you out of your mind? You retired on Friday, and on Monday you start again? Well, I realized over the weekend, people that retire often retire to do what they like. And what I like is play hotels. So I decided to do it again. We created a small ultra-luxury hotel company, Capella Hotel Company. We have none in the United States. We have a number in Asia and Europe. And it's ultra-luxury, small hotels where we do simply everything, as long as legal, moral, and ethical. It's very expensive. We run well over $1,000 a night average rate, but we do everything. So we took it to another level. The small hotels, so we can do everything. And in small hotels, and that guest doesn't want groups to be in a hotel. So we have small hotels, ultra luxury, and have fun doing that. I just sold that company. Again, at the urging of my wife, it's enough, it's enough. I traveled again, went up and up, and so. So that company, again, what was the philosophy there? And it's extremely successful. I promise you, if they continue what they do in 5 years, that name will be the luxury name in the world, Capella. It will be. There's no more holding, unless they really mess up now. And it's something very special. What did we do? We were even more careful in selecting employees that wanted to be part of something special, that wanted to care. That's all, caring, respecting for the human being that walks in, respecting that human being pays our salaries, respecting that human being wants to feel well. We are respecting that we're here to instill that feeling, that well-being in them, not a place to sleep. Last thing, I went to New York not long ago, checked in the evening hotel. I had a business appointment the next morning very early, very early. I got into New York at 11 o'clock at night, one of those fancy name hotels. I come in around, go around the corner, there's the front desk. Was slow, was after 11 at night. It's a guy standing behind the front desk and he says, checking in. I paid $800 that night. Checking in, no welcome. It's a great name hotel. I made up my mind to talk about them. I have not used their name, but I'm always tempted to do it. Checking in, I'm coming here. Yeah, I'm saying, welcome, sir. How may I help you? I'm here for you. I'm spending $800. The next morning, I got up at 6. I got in. By the time it was my room, it was midnight. I got up at 6. For a few hours, I paid $800 because I couldn't find. New York was pretty well sold out. And checking in, and the room wasn't totally clean. What an insult. What an insult. If anybody would come to me and apply for a job that worked in that hotel, I wouldn't hire him. Finish. You see, they're defining out. That guy defined every employee in that hotel as mediocre. He could have defined every employee, including the hotel, as a place of excellence. Well, the cleanliness would have killed it. Small room, $800, checking in. Care? Did he care for me? Nothing. What happened here? Is that employee's fault? I submit it's leadership. They didn't select, they didn't orient, and they didn't teach. We repeat those 16 points, those 24 points that you learn the first, the second, third days. We repeat one point every day. Every employee must listen to the point of the day. Today it may be, if you get a complaint, you own it. And in 24 days, you listen to it again. And you listen to again, so that we don't forget. Only so they said in the beginning, well, why would we do that? They know it by now. I said, oh yeah? Is anybody in this room doesn't know what Coca-Cola is? I bet there's nobody who doesn't know what Coca-Cola is. In fact, Coca-Cola knows that you know what Coca-Cola is, yet they spend billions of reminding you of it. Why wouldn't we repeat what is important, what will make us the finest hotel company? Why wouldn't we repeat that every morning? And remind everybody, we are here to be excellent. Every day, you cannot go to work. We repeat a point and say, we are here to be excellent, not to just work. We are here to define ourselves. We are here to make sure that the people respect us because we are the most excellent. Good luck. Thank you very much. Have a great day.